From the land of the Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of October 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stewart Peterson. The folks from the Anderson's Climbers facility, they make ethanol there outside of Logansport, Indiana, should join us to take a look at the cash grain situation. And we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. We've been thinking they'll get rain and Monte Grosso, but maybe that's not the case. We'll hear more about what impact that could have on crops today and next year when we talk to him as we close out our time together on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Stewart Peterson's Jackie Vakes. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
You're welcome. I always enjoy it.
Well, let's think a little bit about what's happening this week and this fall. For example, farmers are now in the field, as we well know, and they're harvesting grain, but they still have to sell it. What kinds of thoughts should they have in the backs of their minds as they watch that grain go into the combine tank?
Well, I'll tell you what, I can tell you some of the thoughts that are going into their minds. You've got an awful lot of guys right now that have great regrets, who basically are, you know, in the hope stage. You know, I hope it goes up. I hope we find a bottom. You know, if they haven't sold all the grain that they've got, unfortunately, hope's not a strategy. And so I think, you know, you have to keep a very close eye on three different things. One is, of course, the relationship between the dollar and the Brazilian real, because we know that if it gets up high enough, we'll see a lot of dumping coming out of Brazil. As we move forward, you know, and come to the end of the November-December contracts, normally in a year like this where we have, you know, not a crop failure, one of those middle range situations, but still to the higher end, we normally put in a low at this time of year in October, and then do some rallying and then come back down and basically put in a lower low when we get into December. Now, the hope that exists at the moment, Todd, is going to come from next week, Thursday's USDA report. It is one of the friendliest reports for the entire year. And so I think that that's just a reflection of the fact that the grain stocks in past have really sunk the market a lot of times. But let's hope that it's going to be a friendly one again this year. You know, when you look at the technical side of things, 138% retracement is down at 337.5 for December. That's really not a great price, but it's better than what the price could end up being. November beans, 138% is 918. You know, if you look at 918, that's 42 cents less than where we are at the moment. The corn price is about 11 cents less than where we are at the moment. So I was, you know, I'm hoping that we're going to find our way to a bottom. To be honest with you, I've really been hoping that we put in a double bottom at that 344.25 and get this out of the way. But we just cannot seem to do that. And so it makes for a very challenging time because we're kind of in limbo. And so hopefully we have really good export sales tomorrow. Corn is expected to be between 500 and 700 million metric tons. Beans, 1 million to 1.3 million. And wheat, 3 to 5. Those are pretty good numbers, a little lower on corn than what we've been of late. But certainly strong numbers for beans, considering that, you know, China's on holiday last week and this week. And so, again, we're hoping that maybe we'll see some buys come in for beans sometime during the week yet. But that's something that remains to be seen.
Last Friday, the United States Department of Agriculture released that grain stocks report that you mentioned. What'd you think of it?
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting, to be honest with you. Corn came in at $2.295 billion. That was actually better usage than what the average guess was. The usage was 2.93. The reality is, though, you know, the carryout a year ago at this time was 1.7. We're currently at 2.3. So we have to deal with it. You know, the trade has already seen those numbers, so I don't think it's going to be a great big deal. We had better bean usage, 661 million. And, you know, even though we came in way below the average guess as far as the stocks number goes, 301. Last year we were at 197. And on the wheat side, wheat, we only used 782 million. But wheat actually had a lower number, 2.25 billion versus 2.54 billion from September of last year. So, you know, those numbers in themselves are showing aggressive bean usage, which we know is the truth. Decent corn usage, so we obviously have some good feed demand as well as ethanol demand, and probably exactly what we would expect coming out of wheat, because wheat is no longer competitive with corn. Now, the thing I like about this report, Todd, is that I always look at the on-farm, you know, how much do we actually still have on-farm? So this year, basically, on corn, we had 34% in the farmers' hands. Last year, we had 36%. That's very positive. On beans, we had 29%. Last year, we only had 21%. And so the bean number is questionable in terms of what's it going to take to get the beans out of the farmers' hands. I think one of the things that's supporting it at this point in time is when you look at the export demand, exporters are having a really tough time meeting quality standards just because of the beans that were damaged in the Delta in the hurricane. And so hopefully that's going to give us some boost. Let's just put it that way.
What are you hearing about yields?
Oh, man, I wish I could tell you they were all good or they were all bad. I'm hearing basically, variable yields, which is what we expect. So as high as 20 bushel to the acre, greater than average, and in this particular case, it's 250 bushel to the acre is what this one is looking at. So they're normally 230 to pretty even, not a lot of blows. But, you know, it's early. This is high moisture corn that's been converted to dry. So, you know, it'll be interesting when we get into the actual dry harvest. On beans, anywhere from, 20 bushel over to even. And so it's interesting because when you look to the west, as an example, Nebraska had 36 inches of rain this year. I mean, that's just absolutely unbelievable. And they even had, on one particular place I know of, they even had dry land that yielded 240 bushel. So, you know, there's such a wild card out there. We just don't have any idea what's really there. So I think variable is probably the best way to describe it. And, when you look at the markets, they reflect that. There's no real secure position at this point in time when it comes to traders, as far as them being willing to maybe just jump in and buy like crazy or sell like crazy.
You mentioned that the exporters were having a tough time with the beans that were coming out of the south because of the quality there. That, of course, would have an impact on China. But I think they're on vacation the rest of the week. What about the rest of the world? What do you see?
Well, one of the big things is that Russia had an all-time record wheat crop this year. So this has really propped up their hopes because they've been trying to become the top wheat exporter in the world for a long time, and so this may actually help them do it. When you look at Brazil, most of Brazil, which has been begging for rain, got welcomed rain, with the exception of Mato Grosso. And, Mato Grosso is a huge state. It's the largest corn-producing state. It's the largest bean-producing state, so we'll have to be watching that mighty close. But there is more rain on the way. And this was the first week that they had crop ratings, and all the ratings were average. If you use one being the worst and 10 being excellent, they were just 5 for every single crop. And so we'll be watching that, too, to see once how that moves forward over the next, over the growing season itself. But other than that, the situation, of course, is one where they're either planting or they're harvesting or they're not talking, basically, is what it is.
Any final thoughts before I let you go for the day?
Well, I thought this was really interesting, and this wasn't even my impression. The USDA Economic Research Department is going to be putting out some information every single week. And this week, because they're reviewing the farm bill and everything else, they came out and said the definition of a family farm is where the majority of the business is owned by the operator and the individuals related to the operator. So that means that the family farm represents 99% of the farms in the U.S. A small family farm definition is that they produce less than $350,000 in gross income in a year, and that represents 90% of all the farms in the U.S. So I thought that that was pretty interesting because we hear so often, the corporate situation is taking over the world, you know. And I've always argued, you have to really look deeper into the corporation. Is it a family that's incorporating for tax purposes, or is this really, an outside corporation that's actually looking to operate a farm and benefit from that?
Indeed. Hey, it's always good to talk with you. We'll look forward to having our conversation again next week.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Todd.
You're welcome. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, the Senate yesterday evening confirmed two Department of Agriculture officials, Stephen Sinski as Deputy Secretary of Agriculture and Ted McKinney as Undersecretary of Agriculture for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. The Senate confirmed the two on a voice vote. The action followed unanimous approval a day earlier by the Senate Agriculture Committee. Following the full Senate approval, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts issued a statement saying he was pleased that the Senate acted swiftly. Roberts proclaimed, "Secretary Perdue, help is on the way." Perdue has been the lone confirmed USDA-appointed official since his confirmation vote back in the spring. Perdue said the two would provide the steady leadership we need at USDA. Sinski comes from his position as CEO at the American Soybean Association, and McKinney comes from his position as Agriculture Director for the state of Indiana. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where a committee vote is planned for today for the Agriculture Guest Worker Revamp Bill in the House of Representatives. Virginia Republican Representative Bob Goodlatte introduced the bill Monday and vowed to push for a tight timetable. The bill would essentially scrap H-2A in its current form, rename the visa program H-2C, and house it within the Department of Agriculture. Many farm groups applauded introduction of the bill. More than 60 dairy groups penned a joint letter calling the bill a significant positive step forward. However, United Farm Workers and the AFL-CIO told Congress the bill would create even more unfairness and dysfunction in the immigration system. Goodlatte's 2013 version of the bill passed out of committee in a 20-16 vote, but was never taken up on the House floor. Well, let's go overseas now, where the German government will be a key voice in deciding whether the European Union will keep glyphosate on the market and for how long. But because the country just wrapped up an election, it's not clear when officials will be in place to make a decision. The EU has until December 15 to make a decision on the fate of glyphosate, the world's most commonly used pesticide. Farmers across Europe use the herbicide to clear fields for planting, among other things, and want it to stay on the market. Environmental and health groups there have been effective at getting national policymakers to question the safety of the chemical. Despite findings by some EU and national agencies that it's safe, France has already declared that it will not vote in favor of reauthorization, and now many countries are watching to see what Germany will do. Now let's come back to nearer shores. We'll talk about the GOP tax plan, which leaves many unanswered questions, including for farmers and ranchers. An American Farm Bureau official says the answers will be filled in over the next several weeks. What is known about the GOP plan is that it reduces the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%, and the individual rate from a top rate of almost 40% to 35%, with a business rate of 25%. American Farm Bureau tax specialist Pat Wolf says that leaves open the question of how producers' income will be taxed.
What we don't know and what we have to wait and see is how will farm income be divided between the new pass-through business rate, and the individual rate.
A majority of farmers pay taxes as sole proprietors under the individual code, not the corporate rate, which could end up having them pay the new 25% business rate versus the even lower 20% corporate rate, or some mix. Meanwhile, Wolf says while the GOP plan proposes ending the estate tax, it is silent on a related issue.
The blueprint tells us that estate taxes will be eliminated, but we don't know if there will be any changes to stepped-up basis. The document is silent. We don't know what happens to cash accounting. We don't know what happens to like-kind exchanges. We don't know what's going to happen with capital gains tax rates. But we do know that there is going to be a rollback of the deduction for business interests for corporations and maybe for non-incorporated businesses.
The House will vote on a budget bill this week that could clear the way for committee action on a tax bill in the next few weeks. The Senate hopes to complete committee action on its bill by November 13th. And finally today, we've been talking about river rates. Delays along the Mississippi and Ohio rivers are causing a backlog for grain shippers. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch says low river levels and backups at aging locks have slowed navigation on the Mississippi and its tributaries, driving up the cost of hauling Midwestern crops to the Gulf of Mexico and the export terminals there to near-record highs. Grain storage along the Mississippi River is filling up quickly, and cash premiums on soybeans at river terminals have dropped to the lowest level since 2011 amid ample available supplies. As newly harvested supplies reach the market, elevators with barges on hand are prioritizing loading soybeans while storing corn if they have the space. Shippers also have to load less grain onto barges because of the low river levels. Earlier this week, the closure of an aging lock along the Ohio River created a line of 65 towboats waiting to pass. The grain handling woes come as farmers are beginning to harvest bumper corn and soybean crops amid weakening prices, with soybean stocks at a decade high and corn supplies at the biggest in nearly 30 years. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Drew, I take it that there are some disturbances we need to be concerned with again in the Atlantic Ocean.
The storm you're talking about is down in the southern Caribbean. It's now Tropical Depression 16. It is going to be in a hurry to try to develop over the next 2 days. In fact, by the time we get to Saturday night, this storm system will have moved from the southernmost part of the Caribbean Sea to the New Orleans area, or perhaps somewhere along the central Gulf Coast. Now, the models are in great debate at the moment as to where that storm center is going to be. Some models suggest it'll come inland somewhere around the Mobile Bay, Alabama area, and could move towards Georgia. Who knows? But for right now, definitely the central Gulf Coast should be closely monitored. Now, the storm comes inland late Saturday night, early Sunday, and it should continue to race to the northeast once it gets over land. It will not linger like Harvey did. It'll just race across the area, in fact, so fast that we may not get that much heavy rain from it. And that is the problem for the Ohio River Valley, because the storm is going to work its way in that direction. But the combination of its fast-forward speed and cold air coming in from Canada about the same time will end up forcing the storm system through the region so quickly that we probably won't see more than an inch or maybe two at the absolute most. And a lot of that will be absorbed in the ground and not run off very significantly. So I doubt seriously we're going to see any big increases in the river levels on the Ohio. And probably the same problem will still prevail in the Illinois River, too, for a while, as we're just not getting enough moisture to occur in some of that area as well.
And then if you turn your attention to conditions for harvest this week and next, what do you see across the bulk of the Corn Belt?
Well, the good news is that we do have this cold air mass coming in next week. But the bad news is, until it gets here, there's more rain coming up for the Western Corn Belt. That's going to be a problem for areas like Iowa and parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin, even portions of Kansas and Nebraska, will see more rain. It's very wet in some of those areas right now. Fieldwork will be moving along very sluggishly until we get the cold air to come through. That cold is due in probably Monday into Wednesday of next week. And as it pushes through the region, we'll see a quick end to the precipitation, much cooler temperatures, some frost and freezes around. But the good news is once we're in the cold, it will be dry, and we'll see much better drying conditions, and harvest weather will be fairly decent for a while thereafter.
Last time we talked, we were thinking that there might be some rainfall in Mato Grosso, some of the primary growing regions in Brazil. Did that come about?
Well, not really. Mato Grosso, which produces about 37% of the soybean crop, did not. not get much rain. Some areas there, did receive some significant rain, but about two-thirds of the state did not do well. And so the dryness there is raising some big concerns about further delays in the early planting of first-season crops like soybeans. And the longer that crop gets delayed, the more likely they're going to have to delay the second season crops, and the chain reaction will just take us all the way through their growing season. So a lot of question as to how well they will do this year. But the areas further south where the rains were abundant, fieldwork will be aggressive over the next week with no rain in the forecast over the next week to 10 days.
Hey, thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.